believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. You know, I came up with a thought. And essentially, it would be WWFFD. What would the founding fathers do? You ask WWJD, what would Jesus do? So what would the founding fathers do in this country right now? Now, let me read to you a little news story. And it says, cops jump on swine flu power. Pandemic bill allows authorities to enter homes and detain without warrants. Now, before I read this, I want to read to you the Fourth and Ninth Amendments. Fourth Amendment. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. And the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Now, let me read this little story to you. The Pandemic Response Bill, currently making its way through the Massachusetts State Legislature, would allow authorities to forcefully quarantine citizens in the event of a health emergency, compel health providers to vaccinate citizens, authorize forceful entry into private dwellings, and deconstruction of citizen property, and impose fines on citizens for noncompliance. If citizens refuse to comply with isolation or quarantine orders in the event of a health emergency, they would be imprisoned for up to 30 days and fined $1,000 per day that violation continues. Here's the Massachusetts Pandemic Bill Response Bill, right? Pandemic Response Bill 2028 was passed by the Massachusetts State Senate on April 28th and is now awaiting approval in the House. As stated in the bill, upon declaration by the governor that an emergency exists that is considered detrimental to public health, or upon declaration of a state of emergency, a local public health authority, with approval from the commissioner, may exercise the following authority, emphasis added to these, to require the owner or occupier of premises to permit entry into and investigation of the premises, to close, direct, and compel the evacuation of, or to decontaminate or cause to be decontaminated, any building or facility, and to allow the reopening of the building or facility when the danger is ended. To decontaminate or cause to be decontaminated or destroy any material, to restrict or prohibit assemblages of persons, to require a healthcare facility to provide services or use of its facilities, or to transfer the management and supervision of the healthcare facility to the department or to the local public health authority, to control ingress and egress from any stricken or threatened public area, and the movement of persons and materials within the area. There's more, so stay tuned after the break. I'm going to read more of these to you, and then I am going to ask, what would the founding fathers do? Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Karnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Continuing on with this bill making its way through the Massachusetts Senate. I'm sorry, the Massachusetts House. The Senate, it's already passed. It would give the authority to the state government to adopt and enforce measures to provide for the safe disposal of infectious waste and human remains, provided that religious, cultural, family, and individual beliefs of the deceased person shall be followed to the extent possible when disposing of human remains, whenever that may be done without endangering the public health. To procure, take immediate possession from any source, store, or distribute any antitoxins, serums, vaccines, immunizing agents, antibiotics, and other pharmaceutical agents or medical supplies located within the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, as may be necessary to respond to the emergency. To require in-state healthcare providers to assist in the performance of vaccination, treatment, examination, or testing of any individual as a condition of licensure authorization, or the ability to continue to function as a healthcare provider in the Commonwealth. To waive the Commonwealth's licensing requirements for healthcare professionals with a valid license from another state in the United States, or whose professional training would otherwise qualify them for an appropriate professional license in the Commonwealth. To allow for the dispensing of controlled substances by appropriate personnel consistent with federal statutes as necessary for the prevention or treatment of illness. To authorize the chief medical examiner to appoint and prescribe the duties of such emergency assistant medical examiners as may be required for the proper performance of the duties of office. To collect specimens and perform tests on any animal living or deceased. To exercise authority under Section 95 and 96 of Chapter 111, whatever that is in the Massachusetts Code, to care for any emerging mental health or crisis counseling needs that individuals may exhibit with the consent of the individuals, state and local agencies responding to the public health emergency would be required to exercise their powers over transportation routes, communication devices, carriers, public utilities, fuel, food, clothing, and shelter, according to the legislation. Now, don't let the fear get to you. Read How to Overcome the Most Frightening Issues You'll Ever Face in the Country. Now, that's a publication that you can read. But I got to tell you something. One moment. Having some coughing this morning. All right. Essentially, this bill would absolutely take control of everything. If you work anywheres within the medical field, or if you've ever had any medical training, you would be incumbent. You'd, in fact, be absolutely required to assist in whatever the governor's office says. They would take full control. They could come into your house, take you, and do with you as you please, as well as your animals and your possessions. Now, I got to ask you, in the last segment, I read to you the Fourth and the Ninth Amendments. What would give them the authority to do any of that? Now, I'm not familiar with the Massachusetts state constitution, but something tells me there's some provisions against this bill in there as well. Yet again, a perfect example of where legislators should be required to go through the federal and state constitutions, whatever state they're in, before writing a piece of legislation, and it must be consulted during that time. And there should be some judiciary review before the thing's even introduced. Some sort of legal review. Yeah, you know what? We can't really do this. You know what? We're going to do it anyhow. No. So I ask, what would the founding fathers do? There's really kind of a revolution going on in this country, different than a movement. A movement, by definition, it moves a certain distance and it stops. A revolution, on the other hand, keeps coming around, oftentimes right up in your face. And there's a huge section, millions of people in this country, that keep going back to the ideals of our founding fathers. The people that wrote our Constitution the U.S. Constitution, were British subjects until this Constitution was written. They were British citizens. They lived under the tyranny of a king. They lived under the direction of British Parliament and overtaxation, lack of representation, and the king and Parliament essentially doing whatever they wanted with the colonists here in America. That's why they wrote the Declaration of Independence the way they did. And that's also why 13 years later, they wrote the Constitution of the United States. They knew what they were talking about because they were living through, at that moment, the sorts of things we are facing. We're living through some of it now and facing more of it, especially with this garbage coming out of Massachusetts. So there's a lot of people asking, what would the Founding Fathers do? It's not just reflection on the Constitution. It's reflection on their writings. The writings of the men who constructed the Constitution and passed it. Read and see what they had to say for themselves. Now, Dave Champion had a great idea. And remember, guys, tune in, listen to Dave, 3 o'clock Central Time, Monday through Friday, here on RBN. Shameless plug, there we go. Dave says, you know, I believe that we need a new constitution because the one that we have has been so misinterpreted by the courts and misinterpreted by the living, breathing document progressives and misinterpreted by the legislators and misinterpreted by the president that we need to have a constitution that's more well-defined. And on top of that, a book which accompanies the Constitution, which would be many times the size of the Constitution, filled with examples of what each portion of the Constitution says. And I thought, wow, what an unbelievable task, and how unbelievably good that would be. Essentially keeping all of the Constitution that we've got, spelling out a few of the things that have been misinterpreted when you don't go back and understand the writings of the Founding Fathers. They've already said what they mean, but they didn't put it into an official constitutional sort of an affair. It was just in writings and in understandings that they put out there. Like this misinterpretation of the separation of church and state. Wow, that one's got us into a little bit of trouble. People actually believe separation of church and state is in the Constitution. And whenever I hear that, I ask them, please, where does the separation of church and state come from? Oh, it's the law. And in fact, it's not. Where do you think, oh, it's in the Constitution? Show it to me, please. Because obviously I have no idea what's in the Constitution. If you're telling me that, that means you've never read it. You're unfamiliar. Anyhow, the point being, right now, today, looking at this kind of garbage, looking at the socialist reforms. And guys, when I say socialist act and socialist reforms, that is not a good thing. When you hear me use the word socialism, that is something that this country was never, ever meant to experience. Not from within our own borders. So we have come full circle into socialism. We're not even budding anymore. We actually have portions of our government run in a socialist affair. The government that's supposed to answer to us. So I ask, what would the Founding Fathers do? If they were here right now and they saw what was going on, what would they do? Well, something tells me they would probably do what they did back in the 1770s. When they would start putting up roadblocks when it came to this overtaxation. And putting up resistance to the British tyranny. And in 1777, writing a Declaration of Independence, 1776, July 4, 1776, writing the Declaration of Independence, approving it, and then from there, actually fighting for what was right. If, and only if, that now there was no war intended with the, they were prepared for war with the Declaration of Independence, but they did not intend on it. They prepared for it because the king and Parliament could have easily said, Okay, fine, you're right. Instead, they said, you know what? We're going to lock them down. Well, I've got to tell you, the American, I guess, command, the American civilian command, lost the will to win after World War II. Any long sustained battle, we haven't won since then. Korea was a draw. Vietnam was a loss. Well, Gulf War I wasn't long enough to tell. Certainly, Operation Iraqi Freedom in both Afghanistan and Iraq could have been handled many years ago. I mean, these two conflicts that we've got going on over there have lasted longer than World War II, and now we're up against a couple of small countries that are not technologically advanced with the guerrilla war fighting. So the commanders have lost their will to win. Not the troops, don't get me wrong. Not the technology, not the ability. But the actual will to do what it takes to win has been lost for nearly half a century. So, I ask you, what would the Founding Fathers do? I want you to ponder that. I want you to think about it deep inside. And on occasion, if an answer pops up, I want you to shoot me an email, bill@2aradio.com. What do you think the Founding Fathers would do today? I'll be back. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Getting back to this bill going through the Massachusetts legislature, in line 341 of the bill, it states, law enforcement authorities, upon order of the commissioner or his agents, or at the request of a local public health authority pursuant to such order, shall assist emergency medical technicians or other appropriate medical personnel in the involuntary transportation of such person to the tuberculosis treatment center, no law enforcement authority or medical personnel shall be held criminally or civilly liable as a result of an act or omission carried out in good faith in reliance on said order. So that means with absolute immunity, these people can violate every single one of your rights and the rights of your family with absolute immunity. To vaccinate or isolate, whenever the commissioner or a public health authority decides it's necessary to prevent a serious danger to the public health, they are authorized. Now, this is to prevent, all right? This is prevention. This is without any problem happening yet. They're authorized to, one, to vaccinate or provide precautionary prophylaxis, preventative procedures, to individuals as protection against communicable disease and to prevent the spread of communicable or possible communicable disease, provided that any vaccine to be administered must not be such as unreasonably likely to lead to serious harm to the affected individual. And, two, to treat individuals exposed to or infected with disease, provided that treatment must not be such as a reason as is reasonably likely to lead to serious harm to the affected individual. An individual who is unable or unwilling to submit to vaccination or treatment shall not be required to submit to such procedure, but may be isolated or quarantined if his or her refusal poses a serious danger to public health or results in uncertainty whether or not he or she has been exposed to or is infected with a disease or condition that possesses a serious danger to public health as determined by the commissioner or a local public health authority operating within its jurisdiction. Under such circumstances, authorities are also allowed to decontaminate individuals and perform physical examinations, tests, and specimens collected to determine whether an individual presents a risk to public health. If a citizen refuses, he or she may be isolated, quarantined, and or detained for as long as may be reasonably necessary. So that means you're going to be their lab rats. Law enforcement authorities are authorized to arrest without warrant any person whom the officer has probable cause to believe has violated an order for isolation or quarantine and shall use reasonable diligence to enforce such order. That means whatever it takes to overcome your objections. Any person who knowingly violates an order for isolation or quarantine shall be punished by imprisonment of not more than 30 days and may be subject to a civil fine of not more than $1,000 per day that the violation continues. Can you believe this? Seriously. You know, the only way I can imagine, and this is just me thinking right this minute off the top of my head, to oppose such tyranny, if something like this were to go down, is to literally have a community, a small community, even if it's just a bunch of neighbors, encircled and armed to prevent this sort of measure. Karl Marx himself would be proud of this legislation. In total violation of all of your inalienable rights, this bill has made it through the Senate in Massachusetts and is now in the House for approval. Iowa has one that's somewhat similar called the Iowa's Facility Quarantine Order. WorldNet Daily reported a blank document from the Iowa Department of Health, Public Health, and has it's been discovered online, designed to be filled in with the same name of an H1N1 virus victim who's required to relocate from his or her home to a quarantine facility. The form, which began appearing on August 31 in emails and on the internet, has concerned and confused public that's already been swimming in conflicting reports about the severity of swine flu and intrusive government measures that many fear will be taken if the disease becomes a pandemic. The Iowa document, which WorldNet Daily confirmed with state officials is authentic, has done little to calm public fears. The Iowa Department of Public Health has determined that if you have had contact with a person with the novel influenza A H1N1, the form reads, the department has determined that it is necessary to quarantine your movement to a specific facility to prevent further spread of this disease. It's coming, guys. It really is. The department has determined that quarantine in your home and other less restrictive alternatives are not acceptable. The document continues before listing mandatory provisions of compliance with relocation to a quarantine facility. It's coming. And this is the vehicle they're going to use. If you haven't already armed up, you better get on it. If you haven't already trained, you better get on it. Otherwise, this is what you're facing. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Gun control has had yet another misdiagnosis. Gun control cannot accomplish its goals in a free society without misleading the people. Part of the duty that observers like your gun rights examiners sorts of people enjoy fulfill, one of the duties that they fulfill, is educating the relationship about various frauds, errors, and outright lies in the media and from the anti-gun complex when it comes to our liberty, which is seemingly unrelated to the Second Amendment. You can sort out which is which, and you know, it may answer to it may provide many answers to the anti-gunners who are actually willing to think. Right? Here's a response to a lady by the name of Alberta Lee Tribune's article over this last weekend. It's called "The Price America Pays to Own Guns is Lives" by David Larson. I'm sorry, Alberta Lee Tribune is the name of the paper. A guy named David Larson wrote an article called "The Price America Pays to Own Guns is Lives." Mr. Larson writes the following. "More people are killed by gunfire each month on our peaceful American soil than all the American lives lost in the Iraq War in its first 3 years combined." That's what he says. 1 month on the American streets, you have more people killed on American soil than all the American lives lost in the Iraq War in its first 3 years combined. You can verify this with the FBI if you like, but one must bring some critical thinking to the question. Who's doing the killing on U.S. soil? Is it gun owners or criminals who illegally obtain any gun they want? Thugs do not qualify as gun owners. And more than bank robbers, any more than bank robbers qualify as legitimate motorists when they use a getaway car. So, here's an answer, Mr. Larson. Three myths which you post as untruths. One, the government is trying to take away our guns. What do you mean, Kimo Sabe? Two, the slogan, guns don't kill people, people kill people. And three, I am safer with a gun than without one. Okay? Larson posted those three things as untrue. Again, he said that the government is trying to take away our guns is untrue. The slogan, guns don't kill people, people kill people, is untrue. He also said, I am safer with a gun than without one, is also untrue. Absolute falsehoods. Those are all very true. As true as you can get. Who other than the government could try to take away our guns? You'd have to be in a legislative capacity to try and take away guns. Over 20,000 gun laws on the books, but they're not trying to take them away. You're kidding me. Continuing, gun control has been with us since the beginning of the nation. And there comes a point when you have to wonder whether they're ignorant and stubborn or sinister and against our freedoms outright. Anti-gunners are, in fact, against family and country. And I have to emphasize one truth which will impact your family. Anti-gun people know nothing about what the armed citizen is all about. They don't have to know thing one about guns, but they, as Americans, do need to know what the armed citizen is all about in this country. Every American should. First, the government. Several of them, from the feds to the states to major cities, do try to take our guns, as they do it several ways. Guns are regulated by type of ammunition, by dictating where and whom the thing can be carried, and other tricks of legislative creativity. Of course, they do nothing for crime because thugs don't obey the law no matter what you write. So the conclusion that the government bodies do take away your guns and not the guns of criminals is absolutely true. What they are really doing, naturally, is denying you your civil rights and a nation that is self-ruled, not merely ruled. We're being ruled by other American citizens, guys. And that needs to come to an end. Second, guns do not kill people any more than automobiles kill people. Swimming pools do not kill people. Negligent parents kill people. Alcohol does not kill people. Effective self-destructive behavior kills them, which is all a personal choice. Alcoholic help programs remind their members that booze does not fly from the shelf, uncork itself, and pour itself into your gullet. And an inanimate object, all inanimate objects, all of them, are at the behest of the hand of whoever's operating the damn thing. Whether it's a drink, a swimming pool, household chemicals, car keys, or a gun. Just as easy as a gun can be abused, so political power can be abused. And gun control is the absolute perfect example. Today's abuse of the electorate are a different result of what is learned from gun control and how far the people can be pushed. And finally, in a response to this guy's ridiculous statements, a person is safer armed than not. To imply otherwise is to insult the mature self-discipline of a citizen. Larson, the author, cites stats which have been disproven by other professionals since they were very first put out there. Please check them out. I mean, just listen to these. Anti-gun writers oppose our freedoms when they fail to comprehend that the armed citizen is possessed not only of the legality of their authority to stop a crime in progress, but also tactically the first line of defense when it comes to their own safety. I am the first line of my own defense. I am the first line of defense for my family. How about you guys? How about the listeners? Are you the first line of defense for yourself and your family? I believe you are. And if you're not prepared to defend yourself and your family, you're just a victim waiting to happen. Anti-gun activists' habit of hiding this from the electorate is no accident or forgetfulness. It's a hostility against the United States and the gun owners within, and that means you and your family. You see, forcible disarmament, which is gun control, is responsible for more deaths than any armed citizen. You have heard the tell of the bumper sticker that says, "Ted Kennedy's car has killed more people than my gun." In short, this means that the ignorance of what guns are all about and backing that ignorance with official force is responsible for more deaths than affirming citizens' rights is. Interference, hypocrisy, self-centeredness, and a small measure of reality distortion kill more people than official recognition of the civil right to keep and bear arms ever will. Put another way, the number of people killed by criminals in this country does not exist in a vacuum, but in reaction to worth or goodness in comparison, and must be compared to the number of honest citizens of self-restraint and good judgment. This Larson guy is tragically wrong on more and more things that he posts. Not a great writer, for by any stretch of the imagination, just pure ignorance. Larson also added, "Our Second Amendment guarantees our freedom to have guns. It is appropriate that we acknowledge that the price we pay for this freedom is a loss of 30,000 civilian lives each year, where the FBI's figure is actually 10,086 for 2007 there, Mr. Larson. It's an annual, consistent figure, more or less, about 10,000. Nearly all of those are crime on crime. A smaller number are suicide, and a much smaller number than that are accidental shootings. The FBI's total homicide rate for all weapons in 2007 is 14,831 across the entire country. It's easy to see for yourself. Less than half of the 30,000 you say just with guns. Incidentally, the numbers of honest and self-restrained gun owners in the United States, to compare with those 10,086 illegal shootings, or if you prefer, all homicides and all weapons, now exceeds 80 million and is approaching 90 million now in 2009. So let me spell this out. You got 10,086 unlawful or suicidal actions compared to 90 million lawful citizens. You work the percentages. And those 10,086, I flat guarantee you the vast majority of them are within a realm of the dirtbag portion of this society that we, as gun owners, do not consider gun owners. I want to lay a little bit of a comparison. The Mormons, officially known as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There's also the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So you've got the Mormons on one hand, the church, and the Fundamentalist Church would be the polygamists. The regular old Mormons do not embrace the polygamists at all. Do they study from the same books? Yes, they do. Do they practice differently? Yes, they do. Do they believe in God the same? Do they believe in Joseph Smith the same? Yes, they do. But the Fundamentalist Church practices differently. The main difference, not all different, but the main difference is polygamy, a man with more than one wife. And the standard Mormon group has really ostracized them, pushed them away. And they actually, I used to live in Mormon communities. I lived in Utah, which is the home of the Mormons. And the regular old Mormons that do not practice polygamy do not like the comparisons of anything to do with the polygamous communities, the polygamous sect. None at all. So that's very similar to us 90 million gun owners. When you talk about guns in the hands of these street thug criminals, has nothing to do with us. And if it wasn't a gun in their hand, it was some other instrument, they would still be acting the way that they act. They are scumbag criminals. They are street thug, vermin, derelict members of society. And an unfortunate part of society. The only way to handle that unfortunate part of society is to have much more severe punishment. If you want to look at some of the different countries around the world that have far lower percentages of street crime and street thugs, you must look at how they punish criminals. Singapore. Very, very incredibly small percentage of society, way smaller of a percentage of society than we've got in the U.S. They have much more severe punishment. And it's carried out right now. It's carried out without any hoopla, without any BS. If you get caught with illegal drugs in Singapore, punishment is death. And they don't drag it out for 15, 20 years and have appeal after appeal after appeal and stays of execution. You get caught with, say, an ounce of cocaine or even marijuana for that matter in Singapore. You get caught with that and you are going to be put to death. And that includes foreigners. There was a case a few years ago about an Australian who was put to death for having illegal drugs in that country. All right, they don't have much of a drug problem. They hear, oh, that's cruel and unusual. Well, you know, cruel and unusual punishment all depends on what's going to happen. What is the effect of those drugs? 80% of all crime in this country has been shown, scientifically studied, roughly 80% of all crime in this country is committed to support drug and a small percentage of that, alcohol abuses. Most all of it goes back to illicit drug use. Imagine. You start having huge punishment for illegal drug use, and that's going to drop off. Crime is going to drop off. You have huge punishment. I should say much more severe punishment. Not huge. Much more severe punishment for street gang sort of activity. And you're going to see that trail off. You make several people examples here and there. And others who are in it for the glamour of being a thug are going to knock that behavior right off. You look at countries with absolutely rampant crime, and everything is under the sun. Do whatever you want. Those are the places that have very, very weak governments and or very, very corrupt governments. And one of the most violent places on Earth right now is Somalia, who's been without an organized working government for 18 years. 1991 was when their organized government took a dump, which directly after that, in 1991, 1992, late 91, early 92, is when we started hearing about all the problems in Somalia. They're now the pirate capital of the world 18 years later. So there's no consequence for poor behavior, illegal behavior, poor choices. If we had some strong enough punishment to some of these laws where the unlawful exist in our society, we wouldn't have such a problem in this country. Parents aren't doing their jobs, and it begins in the home. But we are a good, probably three generations away from fixing that if we start right now. Part of the fix would be actually having criminals who are convicted serve their punishment, which in a lot of cases should be much more harsh, and all the way through. More to come after the break. Stay tuned. Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot maybe a
little too well. Finger on the trigger, loaded. All right, enough of all this serious stuff. Last night was a fun night. Yesterday, actually, was a very busy day. Finish up the show, go home, get a couple things done, and within an hour or so, my girlfriend and I were headed into Vegas. I'm about 45, 50 minutes on the outside. Run around, do a bunch of errands, have some lunch, have a good time, shoot on back. And a girl's a friend of ours had her birthday this last weekend, turned 26. And by trade, she is a bartender. And I happened to belly up to her bar about 3 years ago on her very first night where she'd never bartended before. She's actually hired as a food server. And you know, smaller bars, it's a nice place. It's just not that busy. And the bartender who came in that night to work was totally drunk. So they fired her and said, do you want to bartend? So literally, she could pour a beer without looking up the drink mixture. And I was messing with her. It's like, hey, can you tell me what's in a Cape Cod? And she'd look it up. Of course, a vodka cranberry. And say, oh, you're such an a-hole. Why do you make me look that up? Why can't you call it? Anyhow, just a lot of fun. And she came over. Her birthday was over the weekend. She turned 26. But we had her over last night. With another good friend of mine, Justin Campbell, handgun combat master number 43 out of Chuck Taylor's camp. He was over, and we just hung out. We cooked up some shish kebabs, did a little birthday cake thing, and sat around out back, had a little fire ring in the backyard, sat around out back, had a couple cigars and a few drinks, and man, it was just an enjoyable evening. And responsible enough that we had the whole thing sewed up by, I guess, about 10:45. But just fun times. I got to tell you, I enjoy entertaining at my house. I've got a tournament size pool table, a 4.5 by 9 pool table. And I haven't actually played a game of pool on that thing in months. So we dusted it off and played a couple games of pool. Had the Sirius satellite radio going on for a little bit of music and, you know, turned it off of RBN and turned it on to a little bit of music for one change. And again, out back and forth, you know, just hanging out, having a good time. And I got to tell you, that really helps you bring things back down to center. It really helps get you back to, you know what, this is fun. Life should be enjoyable. And we talk about all kinds of things, not just on 2A Radio, but on all of the RBN shows, about really bringing the truth out about what's going on from our servants in the government. who are now requiring that we serve them and listen to them by active legislation and active gavel. And when you have a night where you just get to hang out with some friends or some family and just be cool about the whole thing and realize, you know, all of this is at risk. It's nice to have the escape, the conditioned white escape, if you will. But only if you really realize, you know something, this is one of the many things that deserves preservation. What would the founding fathers do? I want you to think about it. I want you to send me your emails on it. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Remember to get out your flags for 9/11/09.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.